I hope that we sort of instilled some pride as well into what a beautiful place they have, right? And what a unique place they're living in. But yeah, we were definitely aliens in that place.
Welcome to See Africa, Breathe Africa, a weekly podcast for those who are interested in traveling responsibly and having fun doing it.
See Africa, Breathe Africa.
If you listen to the mountains, and if you listen to the hills, if you listen to the rivers, you can see Africa, breathe Africa, see Africa, yeah. Yeah, le, 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 le. See Africa, breathe Africa, see Africa, yeah.
Hello, everybody. It's good to be back again. This is See Africa, Breathe Africa.
And we have a real globetrotter among us today, Patrick Vesto from Sweden, who gave exceptionally extensive time to one particular location in Rwanda, the forest of Nyungwe National Park, first alone and then with his girlfriend Maria. He also explored the rarely climbed Rwandan site of Mount Sabienyo in the Virunga volcanoes, giving us another reason to interview him. In addition to my buddy Kahiri, we have Alan Rinda with us, our client relations lady who met the couple and wished to ask some questions herself. But let me begin. Patrick, your way of travel is a bit haphazard. Could you tell us how you like it?
I've been lucky because my job has been very flexible. So what normally happens is I get a feeling, okay, now it's time to take holidays. I buy a Lonely Planet book. For example, I went to Guatemala a couple of years ago, and I just went into a bookstore, bought a book on Guatemala, checked the flights, bought the flights, and I left to Guatemala 1 week later with a return ticket, and that's it. And then I just arrive in Guatemala, have normally one night booked, and then I just figure my way out and see what I want to do with my time. So I love that. It's like, for me, that's freedom. I've kind of just done more and more trips, so I focus just on nature. I go and I hike and I spend time.
And I was happy that, you know, I knew how to direct you, because when I listened to your preferences and needs, I basically had two things in mind. And those were exactly the two things that really touched you. And that was climbing Mount Sabienyo as a mountain full of old growth forest and exactly the, let's say, the Afro-Alpine jungle that you were hoping for. And yeah, the playground of Nyungwe Forest National Park. You spent an amazing, like very unusual number of days in Nyungwe National Park.
The reason why I like Nyungwe and why Nyungwe is special is that it's mostly a very high elevation rainforest. It's called a cloud forest, right? So it's located above, in this case, 1,800 meters, right? And the reason why I like that biome so well is that the rainforest is much more condensed. You have everything happening on your level. If you visit a rainforest on sea level, the trees are huge and everything happens above, right? Far up in the canopy. But in a cloud rainforest, it happens much closer down. And the mosses are covering the trees and they go all the way down. So I personally think it's the most beautiful forest that I've ever seen. And Nyungwe is an amazing example of that. It's got so much happening. You've got the mountains, you've got the swamp that they call the swamp that swallows elephants. So yeah, it's tremendously beautiful. For me, it wasn't weird at all to spend a week in Nyungwe. It made perfect sense.
Like, what activities did you do there?
What I did was I hiked every day for 6 to 8 hours. I had one guide that I got to know. And that's what we did. And that was amazing. And when you spend a lot of time in a place like Nyungwe, you get to know the forest, right? You see new things. You get to know the plants a bit and the trees. You can try different trails and you get connected to the place.
Okay. How was the kind of walk?
I mean, the canopy walk was nice, right? But for me, it wasn't. I know that's the most famous one because it's a quicker walk and I know most Rwandans do it. But for me, what I really enjoy were the longer hikes. Like I did a hike called the Winka hike, which is 8 hours down to the swamp. And that hike was just incredible.
You're being polite. I mean, it's not just that your hikes were longer. That canopy walk is short. So short.
It's super short. Exactly. I mean, the whole thing is longer, right? So from the start to finish, it's probably like hour and a half or something, right? But the actual canopy is just a small part of it, right? But for me, I think what I'm looking for is the feeling when you're out, like when you hike for 8 hours, you're out for a long time, right? You get into it, you relax, you feel the forest, right? And it takes like 2-ish, 3 hours before you get to that state.
How was chimpanzee tracking?
We were super lucky because we got to be amongst the whole group. So there were like 85 chimps. So there were chimps everywhere. It was insane. There were chimps like up, behind, around, like everywhere. So it was great. Like we saw tons of chimps and just the feeling of being in, you know, such a great experience.
So Patrick, tell us about your experience with the climbing of Sabinho.
Sabinho, from a forest point of view, you have probably the first hour and a half. The forest is nice, but not so nice because it's been heavily disturbed by humans. And the way you can see that is that the complexity is lower. You have more, for example, African redwood trees, which are pioneer trees. So when the ground has been disturbed a lot, they come up first. So when you see a lot of African redwoods, you know that the ground is sort of not old. But the beautiful thing with Sabinho was that you still have all the wildlife, and we saw like all the tracks of the elephants. We saw where they slept. Beautiful, beautiful. And then when we get a bit higher up, so I think once you hit about 2,800, something like that, that's when you get to the real old growth forest. So the old growth cloud forest. And you feel it. So when you enter a place that's not been disturbed by humans, you feel it because the complexity is so high. And that was exactly what I was looking for. So the fun thing was I come in, speak to the guys, and I said, hey, I want to submit you. And they were like, oh, okay, okay. And they ask around a little bit. And then finally find me this guy. And it's like, okay, I can do Sabinho. And then I'm like, yeah, have you done Sabinho before? He goes like, no. He's like, I think like 10 people have done Sabinho before you. I come to Africa for wilderness. I want wilderness proper, right? So I want to go off the beaten track, if preferable alone or with very few people. And of the options of Volcanoes National Park, I think Sabinho was the one that was most fitting that criteria in that sense.
Tahiri, when you hear such things, you usually have some like, what? I would never.
I mean, it's pretty obvious listening to Patrick, like the fascination with, you know, this is the only place in the world you can actually do something like that. And I think I'm getting the hang of it that, okay, Zungu's taste and African taste is different from each other. I think what I'm wondering about is, you mentioned Africa is a place where you want to go into the wild, walk off the beaten paths. But then also I hear you've picked up a bit of the lingo. You seem to have formed relationships with the people. You sort of had a bit of a conversation going there or something. At least you understood each other. Maybe there was a bit of camaraderie. And I'm wondering if that's something that contributes to the trip. Was the people, the culture, anything else apart from elephants and buffaloes, did anything impact you? Or that's what you came to see, that's what you got, and you were quite happy with that?
It's a very good question, right? I think there's two answers to that question. I think primarily I came to do a nature trip and not a culture trip, to be honest, right? So I focused my time on that because that's, for me, what I wanted to see. And that's also, for me, the experience of being out in the wild, right? But I think I did got a lot from my relationship with Jack, who was my guide in Nyungwe. And we hiked with Jack every day. So I hiked with Jack for, I think, 3 or 4 days first time. And then we hiked with him another 3 days. So me and Jack got to know each other well, right? We spent 6 to 8 hours every day hiking. And for me, that was great, right? Because not only did he know the forest super, super well, he also loved the forest very much. He knew everything about it. But he was also from the place, right? His parents came from the village next to Nyungwe. His grandparents lived there, and he spent his whole life in that area, right? So he knew it in a much wider way than just being a guide, right? And I got a lot out of our conversations, both about like growing up, like how it is growing up there, how it used to be. So getting to see it and meeting people was a much deeper experience than if I would have just passed by, so to say. And he was so grateful that we took the time. Because he's like, hardly anybody stays. Like they all drive through, they go see the chimps, and then they just drive through, they jump in the car and they drive through, right? So people kind of know that the Zungus come and they visit, but they don't get to see them, they don't get to speak to them. So that was also such a meaningful visit for us because they were genuinely happy to have us. They were genuinely happy to answer our questions, to hear about who we were and why we were there. And they're also very curious to understand why their place was special. Why do you pay tons of money and fly really far to come to our village? of all the places in the world, right? I hope that we sort of instilled some pride as well into what a beautiful place to have, right? And what a unique place to living in. But yeah, we were definitely aliens in that place.
Yeah, to them, you're probably as curious as seeing a buffalo. Patrick, I couldn't help noting that you could just get up and like decide next week I'm going to travel to Rwanda. I mean, getting things like visas and all that is a lot easier to sort out from that side. Because I know if I was to plan to travel from here to Europe, man, that would be like, I need to plan for this like 6 months ahead. So I find it rather interesting. Is it easy? Like, just how easy is the visa processing thing from that side?
The lucky thing about being from Europe, right, and Sweden in particular, I think Sweden is the third, it's the top five country where you get into most countries with your passport. So essentially, the standard is that anywhere I want to go, I don't have to ask for visas. Like, you get a 30 days or 90 days visas on arrival. So I don't even think about it. Like, I never think about visas. I just go. And sometimes on the way, you kind of realize you have to fill in some form or whatever. But like, it's not a thing I ever think about.
Oh, wow. Really? Countries like this exist in the world. This is news to me. Patrick, it's been such an honor, such a pleasure having you on the podcast. We love your stories and just the way that you talk about things and you're able to paint a picture. And we've been hearing about this book that you are writing. I'm sure our listeners and us ourselves would love to know more about what you're writing about, what's inspiring it, where you're coming from, and a little bit of what to expect. So could you please, as we close the show, talk about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. So we have a small house in the forest, and it's about an hour and a half from where I live in southern Sweden. And I always felt like something was off with that forest when I was a kid. And I always liked the trees around our house more than I liked the trees further outside. So what I realized after a while was that the reason why I didn't like the forest outside was because they were planted. So that led me into the question of what forest does Sweden have? And what I've sadly realized is that 90% of Sweden's so-called forests are not forests at all. They're plantations. So they've been clear cut, they've been plowed, and they've been planted in straight rows of all the same species. And our entire landmass is now a forest plantation. So I decided to investigate, both from a political point of view, like how did this happen and how did nobody notice? And secondly, which is a much wider question, is what is our relationship to wild places? So when you come to Volcanoes National Park, you get the sense, because you have people farming, and then just beyond them, you have some of the most intact wilderness on Earth. You have one of our closest cousins, the gorillas. You have elephants, you have buffaloes. So for them, wilderness is not an abstract concept they see on TV, right? Wilderness exists in their life. It's just beyond the horizon. Whereas in Europe, it's mostly something we see on TV, right? We are so far away from it. I think that's a journey that's happening all across the world, that we're losing this connection to our past and this feeling that we once were a part of nature. And Africa, for me, brings the perspective of how that is, right? And how we were once much closer to nature than we are today. And it's also why people are willing to pay $1,500 to see gorillas. People are willing to fly all the way to Africa, pay $1,500 for 1 hour. So what are you paying for, right? You're not just, you could see them on TV. You're paying for the feeling, right? The feeling of being next to something, something wild, something different, and something, I think, from our past, from our human's past.
Would you like to learn more and go deeper? Follow us on Apple Podcasts by pressing the plus button at the top, or on Spotify, you should simply tap follow under the podcast title.